God didn't need something when he created the world. He didn't need us. He wasn't solving a problem. He wasn't trying to fix something. He wasn't trying to produce something useful, in a sense. He was creating out of delight, out of love.
Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. Make sure you're subscribed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast, and follow me at Theology of Hustle on Instagram. Now, let's get to work. Well, Brianna Lambert, thanks so much for joining me for the podcast. Excited to chat.
Yeah, thanks so much. I'm glad to be here.
I love it. So let's just kick off and have you maybe give the quick bio, kind of who you are, what you do, all of that good stuff.
I'm Brianna Lambert, obviously. I am a writer. I live in a small town, small rural town just south of Indianapolis, Indiana. We live out in the country. It's really nice. We don't have too much land, but we have farm fields all around us, so we love that. I've been married almost 16 years now, and I have three kids. They are 13, 11, and 9, and I stay at home with them and homeschool them. We've done that through their whole educational journey so far. And then on the side, when I have time, I write for Gospel-Centered Discipleship and various other articles, and then I have a book coming out.
Yeah, I love it. Well, good stuff. We have kids very similar ages. Mine are 16, 14, and 9. So we're kind of in that same boat there, the craziness. Love it.
Well, it makes it really fun too, though, because they're such good friends. At least, you know, mine have been able to just grow up together and play together.
It is beautiful. I think with kids, I don't know. Sometimes it's like any of life, though. You like the hard parts stand out more than like the good parts. So like, you know, the boys fight and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, but it is, you know, there is such joy, you know, even in the midst of like some turmoil and chaos, I guess. Right.
For sure. Yeah. There's that too.
I love it. Interested. I mean, I know you're a writer, but your primary kind of vocation, your work these days is being a mom and schooling children. I would love to kind of pick your brain about that. It's been a long time since I've had somebody who, you know, stays home with their kids on the podcast. So I'd love to, is that okay if we chat about that for a second? Okay. Well, so I guess for a jumping off point, I mean, our society is so, it revolves around what you do for work, right? It's almost the first question somebody asks you when you meet them, you know, somewhere new, like, what do you do? Right. And so I think, you know, I had a season of staying home with my kids. And I remember in that season, it was just like, you know, my identity got lost in that somewhere. I mean, do you struggle in those ways or with kind of how culture sees, you know, somebody who, you know, homeschools, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, for sure, there's all the stereotypes and the all of that stuff. I don't know that I ever got lost. I think that probably part of the reason why I have this book also is that I've also really just enjoyed investing myself in other things that I also have deep joys within, that I have passions for, that has really been a blessing to me through the hobbies that I do enjoy and the extra activities. I've always wanted to be a mom. I'm so glad to be a mom to my kids, to spend time with them. So that's always been a joy amidst the difficulties. It's for sure a difficulty. I guess speaking to that though, it makes me think, I can't remember. I think Alan Noble wrote about this. I think, this idea that it may not have been him, but anyway, the idea that we can be so wrapped up in motherhood. And to be honest, I have felt that from other people sometimes more than me. I can just think about some really well-meaning people, well-meaning like coworkers of my husband's or whatnot. As soon as I, you know, have a meeting and I say I'm a stay-at-home mom, I feel like they often have responded with, oh, that's the hardest job in the world. And they're really well-meaning, but then that's all that they say, you know?
Interesting.
And then we're just kind of left with, like, I don't have anything more to say to them. They don't have anything more to say to me. And so I think those people are really kind, and not that we can still talk about other things, but it just feels like once you kind of get time to stay at home mom, people are like, I don't really know how to relate to you anymore. and that's kind of sad because, you know, like I know, and like everyone else knows, I'm a person with passions and interests, and one of those passions is my kids, but a lot of other passions are other things. And so I think that's why, honestly, not trying to segue, but I think my book tries to pull that out, that, like you said, our lives are not only about our vocation. So when we can realize the importance of other passions God's put in us, it allows us to communicate, find common ground within other people, whereas otherwise you're kind of like, oh, well, I don't know what to say to that. You know, I mean, even regardless of stay-at-home mom, that could be with anybody. You know, you talk to a plumber or a mechanic or something, and you're like, well, I don't know anything about that. But that's okay, because actually that person is way more than just their vocation, just like a stay-at-home mom, you know, is more than their vocation as well.
That is such a good word and an excellent segue. I'm here for all the segues. That was great. I love it. We're here. I like to just go wherever the conversation flows. So your book is called Created to Play, and it's forthcoming, right? Forthcoming from IVP?
Yeah, May 19th.
Yeah. May 19th. Out. Okay. Mm-hmm. Out May 19th. I was saying before we even got started that I just enjoyed it even more than I thought I would. A part of why I had you on the podcast is I am in need of professional help. And I think you're a professional here, because I find myself struggling so much with this concept. I don't know if it's I want to pick your brain. Do you feel like there's seasons of life where it's much harder to get into play and have hobbies and all of that stuff? Yeah.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
I find myself in my 40s and I'm like, did I forget how to play? I don't know what to do with myself. I'm frequently bored, but don't know what to do, I guess. And so I would love some professional help here. So,
yeah. Oh no, I definitely think there are seasons for when you have more time for things. There are also seasons, I think, when you're getting out of one where you are, I mean, going back to the motherhood, but I think anybody can relate to this too. Like, I've had multiple friends who tell me, you know, they've been in the season of toddlers or babyhood. And it's like, as they start to have more time, they're like, wait a minute, what do I enjoy? You know, and maybe their husband has hobbies that they have. And they're like, well, I don't know what mine are. You know, but anyone could be any single person can have that same kind of situation within after a certain season, you know, questioning, what do I like to do? And then obviously, as we age and grow, we all change and the interests that we have might shift. As far as I'm thinking about that, I think that my book, kind of my goal, would be that people who read understand that, playing and hobbies don't have to look a certain way, that you can actually fit play into your life in a multitude of ways. And I think I try to show that between the different kinds of hobbies. I mean, even in my book, showing how, we are curators, even in the way we decorate our home or even the way we pick out our wardrobe, and just delighting in those little things. I mean, not that everyone has to love doing that, you know, but just seeing how I'm already doing these things in such small ways. I think that the Instagram world, TikTok, whatever social media just presents this idea of hobbies and, you know, what we call self-care, as this, certain picture of this needs to look like this, right? This needs to look like I'm spending 2 hours fishing, or I'm, you know, like I'm weightlifting this many times a week, and, you know, it's a perfect time and I feel so restful. And I mean, I think incorporating play into our life and incorporating a play that's centered on worshiping God and receiving his good gifts doesn't always look like the picture perfect moment, you know, and it doesn't even have to extend into a certain length of time. So I think, as I was writing this, I had to think through myself. I don't want to write something that's telling people to do something that's not possible. You know, I want it to be possible. Like, if play is for us, it needs to be for everybody in any situation, you know, with your time restraints or whatever. And actually, I truly believe that's possible. We live in God's gorgeous world. Yeah. Even just stepping outside and looking at the sunset, you know, and receiving that with a heart of worship and thankfulness and delight, you know, is an opportunity to play as well.
I totally agree. Was part of the why you wrote the book now, that you've seen, like, have we lost this ability sort of as a culture? Like, in some ways, it just feels like, I don't know. It feels like people used to have hobbies more readily, or there was more opportunity maybe. Like, do you see like there's been a cultural shift sort of away from play and hobbies in general?
Yeah, I think so. I slightly disagree and agree.
Okay.
That actually, great. I feel like at this moment for certain people, and that would be me in where I live and the availability of things, play or hobbies, I guess is what I say, hobbies, is very accessible in the fact that there are so many YouTube videos out there going to tell me how to do something. You know, we don't have to learn how to crochet or to learn how to leather work, you know, from somebody who's teaching us now. We can just go on YouTube and find it. So in one aspect, we do have an enormous opportunity. Besides that, I mean, the mass marketing of goods, I can go onto Amazon and get whatever materials I need, right? I can get cheap light boxes, cheap flashes for my camera, and I can go do photography. So in one sense, it's really prevalent. But in agreeing with you, in another sense, it's not. Because I think that a lot of that, the play and the telos of that, the purpose of it, is directed towards production, is directed towards what can I get out of this, to measurable results, you know, towards the idea of how do I make this useful? How do I make this into a side hustle? How do I make this some sort of utilitarian means? So in that, I think, yes, we have lost the opportunity to truly experience play the way that God has given it to us, you know, the way that he has intended it to be.
Yeah, no, that's a good correction, because I pretty much everything I learn these days is from YouTube for sure. So a big advocate of that, but
which is a gift. Yeah, it's not.
It
bad.
Is a gift, and on the same and at the same time though, back in the day, you like having to learn something from somebody meant that there was a connection. So you can almost do hobbies like disembodied, so to speak. You know what I mean? Like without community, and I just wonder if. You know, I mean, you speak to this in the book about how, you know, kind of hobbies bring people together. That's like an important part of it. And I wonder if some of that like individualism of our society and has even like mutated. That's probably not the right word, but has gone into our hobbies and the way we, you know, live that side of life, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something. I like with all things, right? There's something you gain and something you lose. Mm-hmm. So for sure. So yeah, in my book, there's a richness to community, to working through, playing with these hobbies, within community. That's what I try to touch on in each, chapter that I talk on, of how do we experience this slightly differently within other people, but then at the same time, there is also a really good thing of doing alone as well, right? Somebody, like one of the, somebody to think about, like, you can, you know, enjoy beholding beauty, traveling, you can do that with somebody. And it could be a really special experience. You can be enriched by somebody else's thoughts. But then also there's something lovely and beautiful about being alone, right? Looking at the stars. And so both of those are good, but yeah, no, I think you have a great point about individualism. And again, I think all of that, feeds into the, I need to be productive, right? It's about individual productivity. What have I done? And it really takes away the play and delight, from our hobbies.
Yeah, like delight in and of itself. Like delight could be a telos, as you say. That could be an end in and of itself, right? Yeah, we've lost that. God, there's so many places I could go here. I mean, even, well, for me, Sabbath is one of those places that taught me like delighting in and of itself can be just a good thing. Like just resting and delighting in God's goodness. I mean, you know, we get this sense as Christians a lot of times like this world's evil and we have to kind of run from it or something and kind of disconnect. Whereas, you know, I mean, God did say it was good. It's fallen. It's broken in some ways, but good. And so we miss out on those like delighting in these good things that God has given us. Even though there is brokenness in the world at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One of the, one of the hopes I have is that this book shows that there is not a, I mean, this is kind of speaking to what you said, but there's not this division between things in our life that are religious and things that are secular. But God is the God through whom everything exists. We can, I mean, Colossians 3 talks about this with, you know, Colossians 3 is a wonderful passage. And it talks about setting our things on things that are above, not on things that are of earth. And that passage, we can come to it and be like, okay, well, things that are of earth are probably the things I like to do, you know, that aren't really, aren't Jesus centered or something. Right. But actually, if you read through that passage, it's talking about the old self. It's talking about our lust, our pride, our anger. It's talking about putting off the old self and living in the new self. And so what I hope as people are reading this is realizing that, this new self is something we take to our entire day. And that includes everything that we do, including receiving the gifts of God in play. It includes our hobbies. So those things don't have to be, like you said, these are good things. Like, God created us to love food, right? Like, if we're a foodie, like, he gave us these tastes. They're not bad, right? This is good. He created us to delight in order. So as we're collecting or we're like enjoying a puzzle, these things are good. And so we can live out our new self in these things because there are no boundaries. And in the end of that, in Colossians 3, that's where Paul says, whatever you do, you know, whether you eat or drink, like, do all to the glory of God. And so it's just a reminder that there's no divisions here. God doesn't have, this isn't my world. This isn't part of me. This isn't, you know, it's all his world. You know, sin is the bad, right? Mm-hmm. But enjoying his gifts and the things he created is not.
Yeah, no, that's a good word. I appreciate that. We'll get into kind of the categories that you say for play, but I want to just like, I guess continue with the diagnosis just a touch more, because as I was thinking about all this, social media came up in my mind, right? And we're almost seeing this sort of backlash against a lot of social media right now, which I think is probably a good thing, just realizing some of the negative effects maybe it has in our culture and such. And I wonder, as I was reading your book, I wonder how many people have substituted like maybe the phone in general or social media for hobbies, right? Maybe some of the issue is that like, instead of knowing how to have hobbies and how to have fun, like we just sit on a phone and sort of scroll. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah. To which I am a,
I mean, definitely in this bucket.
Yes. And that's because, okay, this is another lie then that, because honestly, on this side of the fall, our hobbies require work, because it's actually harder. It's harder to, at the end of the day, say, you know what, I'm going to keep working on that project, or even I'm going to pull out that novel, versus I'm going to just binge watch this show, right? One requires more energy than the other. And that's not even saying, like, I include movie watching as a hobby, as a good gift. I actually think movies and stories and TV shows can be very enriching. But even there, I mean, I found sometimes I have a good movie, you know, that's worthwhile. But I'm like, I don't want to take the energy for that one. I'd rather watch this one that's really easy, right? Yeah. And again, that's not to say we can't do easier things, but yeah, overall, I think that those forms of play, while they can be forms of play, I think like even like memes and reels and all that stuff, they could be fun, right? They surely can. I don't think those are necessarily, we have to shove those in the evil, right? And be like, they're terrible. But it's an easier form. And it's when we only go to that, when we consistently go to that, we are negating the other forms of play that actually would fuel our souls, right? In more ways. But they take a little bit more work. I think that's on this side of the fall, something we have to grapple with, right? So before the fall, work and play went together. They lived in harmony. It wasn't a chore, right, to go labor in the ground. I mean, between those, our vocation and our play was just completely compatible. And on this side, we don't. So even things that are even fun hobbies still require some amount of work.
Yeah, that's good. I had not thought about that. That is interesting that the toil of it, even the toil of a hobby is, yeah, part of the fall, or like it takes more work because of that. I hadn't quite considered that as so we can't actually be like wholesale selves, like working and sort of playing sort of together with God. Right. Huh, that's interesting. That's a good note. I just get this. I get this. Cause I'm that person. I turn everything that I do into a job. I'm like, let's get a business going, right? We can like sell this thing, you know, like it's, and I feel like I'm probably speaking to a vast majority of people out there that do the same thing. Like that we feel like we have to be doing something and then we have to put it on social media or else, you know, people won't know about it, you know, which can be part of play, as you point out in your book. There is a play style that you know is about telling other people about beauty and things. But it just yeah, I think the cards are stacked against us, as I'm sort of still kind of diagnosing. So but when we moved about 5 years ago from Illinois down to Texas to be near family during COVID, like the vast majority or a lot of people did, right? And because of that move, I did woodworking. I had to sell my saws because there was not room for them. I golfed a lot in Illinois, but now I work a 9-to-5. So I don't have the flexibility that I used to because golf takes forever, you know? And so I find myself like just sort of lost, like all these things that used to be easy go-tos for me. And I could kind of piddle around with them. I just don't have the capacity, I don't have the space or even the tools to do that sort of thing anymore. Yeah.
Oh, that's hard. Yeah. So our differing situations can definitely change. I think yeah. Do you want diagnosis here?
But yeah, let's go for it. You're I'm bringing you in to give me life advice here. So
not a therapist.
I won't put you in that position. I won't put you in that position.
I would encourage you, and it would help that you can think through what new ways that you can find that bring you to light, or new ways that you can look for that don't involve an end product, yeah. You know, that can bring you into just delight and ultimately worship. And like we said, that doesn't have to be a certain amount of time or a certain amount. Yeah, it just how can that fit into your days? And hopefully, right, like the things that you loved before can come back at some point, if they can. But yeah, I would just encourage you to be open to morphing and learning new things, right? I think that's something we all kind of have to be open to as we move through different situations in our lives.
Yeah, and I just get I've seen on social media so many of my peers, people my age, just struggling with the exact same thing, you know, like just kind of lost, and maybe things that, you know, like used to make sense don't anymore. And like being able to kind of to switch and try something new can be pretty hard, which is why your book was actually really helpful for this, because we'll get into it. So you break down kind of categories of hobbies throughout the book. I wanted to bring up one that was like really striking to me, which was the nourisher, which you've already alluded to, but I had never kind of considered. I love to smoke meats. Just got a new smoker. I'm very excited about it. I never kind of put that though into the category of a hobby or something. It's something I gravitate towards, but I never thought, oh, this is maybe something I should do more because it does give me life, you know? So there was these surprising moments of like, oh, maybe there are more things in my life that I could pour my time into and just don't for, you know, whatever reason.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm really glad. I'm glad you didn't think about that. Yeah, I think nourisher, I think probably when people think of cooking hobbies, they mostly think cooking and baking.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, in the nourishers, think about even like people who love to make their lattes or whatever, you know, cappuccino. I don't do coffee. So, but you know, there's all this latte art and people really getting into the kinds of coffee beans they grind. I don't know if it's just because sometimes some of that especially is you have to, you know, because might not have to, but you know, you're doing it anyway to feed your family, just because you have, somebody has to grill, somebody has to smoke, somebody has to make the spaghetti tonight. I'm a baker and a cook. Like I just enjoy it. And so to be honest though, with my homeschool and with writing and all that stuff, I actually don't bake and cook a ton extra than what we need. Yeah. So I don't even get to really have fun with it outside of that. But acknowledging and seeing like that, that's a deep joy, does allow you to, in those moments, even when it is, I like have to, you know, it doesn't feel like you're doing a hobby. You can be like, hey, wait a minute. Like you just said, you know, this is actually, giving me joy right now. And this is kind of fun. You know, one thing I like to do, my family, always makes fun of me because I get real bored with food. So like the way I have fun with it is I maybe cook similar things, but I'm always looking for new recipes for it. So like, it'll be like, have we had this one before? I'm like, nope, I just tried a new one just cause I was bored. So that's the way that I kind of make it more fun. And just enjoy the process. And I think that was a realization I had of like, oh, that is why, cause I'm trying to make it more fun. I'm trying to learn more as I do it, you know? And it's just a way you can enjoy it, but while you're doing something you would have already been doing.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess maybe the tricky part is that it like feels mundane because it's something you're just doing already. But like, I don't know. Is there a switch that you have to turn? I mean, maybe even thinking about it like makes it more fun. Like the fact that I do enjoy it, if I'm not kind of thinking about how I enjoy it, that like I'm not kind of treating it as I could or should, you know, am I like, as I'm smoking, am I thinking like, I actually really love being out here and the smell of smoke and kind of the slowness of a day. Like when you're smoking, just, you know, there's no hurry with smoking. Actually that it's a detriment to hurry, you know? And so maybe like not even like, I guess that, different lens, right, lends itself to allowing me to enjoy it more when I do consider it something pleasurable. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. I guess what I'd say too is the goal of my book is not to say, here's all the things you need to start thinking about when you're fishing or when you're smoking, right?
Good point.
Be sure that when you're waiting on your brisket, that you're remembering how God nourishes us and you're like remembering that this is the manna for your family. Like, I don't actually want people to be bogged down.
Good call. With,
like, I better be hobbying enough. I think just the beauty is that at some point, right, you acknowledge and you're grateful and you're like, wow, like you think more of God, you glory in him. I would think, like, I guess I'll just use my own example. I don't think every time that I bake, right, I'm thinking all those things. But periodically, right, through the whole of my life, our life is a, you know, as Eugene Peterson said, long obedience in the same direction. During the long journey of our life of obedience, we're just going to have here and there just continual little, like, delights in the Lord, continual little opportunities to worship, continual opportunities just to think through those things and little thoughts here and there. I think that's what I'm going for, that I hope that we could be free to have, not necessarily, you know, bogged down with a, I hope I don't mess anything up and I hope I remember all these things and I hope I'm relaxing enough. But just a continual realization of that our life is lived out beneath the Lord, you know, in worship of him, in that our life is continual gifts from him that we can see through through our play.
Yeah.
So I think that helps with the mundane things, you know, that at times they'll still feel mundane and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate you not wanting to, us to feel shame as we approach our hobbies and play and all of that. So one piece of this, so you lay out kind of this, broad category of different sort of hobbies and things to think about. One interesting aspect though, is you put a, I can't remember the exact phrasing, but like a sin or a, not a sin, like a say it again.
A temptation
for each hobby. Can you help me understand kind of why you went that direction? Cause I found it crazy insightful. I just would not have thought to do that when talking about hobbies, I guess.
Yeah. So, while me and my editor were working through this book, we kind of wanted to look at just the virtues of each category. And then along with that, we wanted to think about the vices, that might hit. And so, it was a little hard, because I mean, there are so many of them, right? Like you can say a lot of things. I wanted to say one specific thing, you know, one key temptation, and honestly, yeah, in that section, I really tried to pick out ones that I didn't think people would really think of sometimes, to kind of draw attention to a temptation. Like, for example, the makers one. I think when makers are creative, people who create things, whether it's woodworking or painting or even could be singing, writing, just the creation of something. I think, and this is one for all of them, pride was one that like would go with every single one of these, right? Sure. So I think that might be the one you might think, oh, you don't want to get pride in the work of your hands. And while that's 100% a temptation, I actually wanted to go with one that maybe people wouldn't think of. So in the makers one, we went to despair. And personally, that's one that I can definitely relate to as a writer, who I think artistic kinds of people are very prone to despair when what they create falls short of what they envisioned. And I think, so yeah, it was really fun thinking through like, well, what's really going on here and what would be the key, vice and temptation that somebody might face.
Yeah. One that really jumped out to me, and I think you mentioned it, even in the book, is, the mover, category, yeah. You put the temptation as gluttony. Do you mind kind of unpacking that a little bit for us?
Yeah. I was glad they let me keep that one, because I was real excited about it.
It was good. I was like, oh, I did not see that coming, but yeah. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So most of the time we think of gluttony as in relation to food. And it could coincide there, and throughout history, it has been attributed to that. But the root of it is a gluttonous attitude is one of excess. And I actually think that with regards to movement is something where we can easily see a hunger for more, a hunger for, results, you know, in your workouts, a kind of gluttony and desire, just to push yourself even beyond, what your body is capable of. And we can see that in injuries, you know, in, wearing ourselves out in, you know, weightlifting and tracking your macros and all that stuff to the detriment of your body. Yeah. And I think that's something that as Christians, there's a temptation to say, well, I'm beating my body into submission. You know, this is a good thing. But actually it is not a good thing to ignore the real limits of our bodies that God has given us, you know, and in that sense, for the mover, it might actually show greater self-control to actually rest, greater self-control, to eat more, right? When your body needs it, and greater self-control to skip a workout, than it would be to push your body and to, hunger for more than your body's limits allow.
Yeah. That was one that I know some people who are definitely playing that way. I play in that way some, but, I definitely know some people who, you know, that's their whole life, can easily become sort of that movement. And, you know, that's one of those places where you can end up monetizing as well, you know, and I think that, it easily turns. What, in your sort of writing and categorizing and thinking through different hobbies, what were some that jumped out to you that like people might not actually think of as a hobby or kind of out of left field? Like, did you have any aha moments as you were kind of thinking through some of these hobbies?
So I joke with my husband that, I wouldn't know about so many of these hobbies if it were not for him. He has opened my mind, and honestly, like just researching hobbies, and it is really cool to see how many different hobbies there are, how many like niche groups. And there's a podcast, called Niche to Meet You that does some of that and goes into these really niche hobbies, like turkey hunters, or I don't know, like a whole bunch of like these crazy puzzlers that do stuff. They're not crazy, but you know what I'm saying? Anyway, yeah. There is a lot of hobbies out there. So that was just fun to learn about. And honestly, it just makes me really happy and like really excited for people, especially in these groups. Like we got my kids a slot car for Christmas, and I didn't realize apparently there's like adult groups of like slot car racers. Like, you know, they just, you know, the little cars they go around on the track. I'm just learning things new every day. And it just makes me excited to see people doing that. But as far as, I mean, I don't think people, my family does ham radio. People don't really know about that. As far as other ones that people wouldn't consider a hobby, I mean, I think my chapter on heralds is probably one that was more off, a little bit more out there, including like people who share memes and who share reels and who like to share on social media. Like you said, you know, we don't really think of that as a hobby, but I think as I was thinking through things, I thought, well, I think people do really do that for delight. And I mean, and there's a bunch of bookstagrammers, and now those can get into monetary side hustles as well. But, or like book reviewers, I have a good friend who she's just does the best reviews. And anytime she posts something about things she's read, I'm like, I gotta check out that book. But she doesn't do it she just does it to share because she loves reading. And she's like, hey, this was a great book. And again, that's not to say that the people who get money on it are bad. They're not.
Yeah.
But I do think there are genuinely people out there who are, you know, sharing stuff and it does give them a deep joy to do that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I appreciate that. It was expanding for me, I guess. You know, just thinking of like, there's things that people enjoy that like, I don't understand how they could enjoy that, you know, but like, that's awesome. I love that, you know? And so I think maybe even taking delight in other people's delight in things that I might not care about is pretty interesting, you know?
I will tell you, okay, my hardest chapter probably was my connectors chapter. So that one, I combined a lot of different hobbies, which I do kind of do combine together, and they have threads. I do, one of them is ham radio. And so we have done that as a family, but it's also watching sports and board games. I do like some board games, but honestly, don't get mad, but I don't watch sports. My family does not. And we don't really get too much into board games. Like people get really into board games, and those ones I just can't really do. I can't follow. Yeah. So that chapter was kind of hard for me. More so in the, but what was really neat though, is because I didn't relate to it, right? It was hard in the sense of coming up with examples that were really good, or like trying to think through. I texted my pastor, who watches sports and stuff, and I would run lines past him, like, does this sound right? Because, but what was really neat is just to spend time digging in, and because while I don't like it, I 100% can see so many reasons of why it's good, of why it's lovely, and how God works in it, and so yeah, it's pretty neat. And my husband probably will think it's fun, or my husband has found it funny because maybe infuriating, because he'll say something about some random like act, like hobby or activity. And he's like, you know what? He's not mad about it though. He's like, why would you do that? And I'm like, well, here's all the reasons why it might be really beneficial, like really like enriching, you know? And I give off all the things and he's like, okay.
You know, I could see that. We were just having a conversation last night at small group. One of our friends is very into birding. It's a kind of a newer thing for him. And he's been taking his kids out and they love it, you know, and they love it. And like, I can't even like the last time I even like noticed a bird, like I can't even tell you, you know what I mean? It's like, it doesn't compute to me that that would be something to be enjoyed. But like the joy this man feels, you know, for just like looking at birds and spending time with his kids and is pretty special. So yeah, we need to be less judgy, I guess, maybe about other people's hobbies. Maybe that.
Yeah, we should. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. That's I hope this book also does that.
Yeah, it really is eye-opening, you know. Connectors was interesting because that was all built around people who have hobbies specifically to be with others. Is that kind of how you were framing that?
Yeah, on that one there's a couple two avenues of that. Okay. Yes. They included ones that connect to other people. So, you know, when you're watching a sports team, you're part of something. I think that's what's really, there's another author, Samuel James, talks about this. But like the idea of in our polarized world, like we can be plenty polarized about sports, but still the fact that we can come together, you know, just around the country from so many different views to cheer on teams. There's a connection there. And then, yeah, ham radio, connect people because you're talking to people, board games you do with others. But then there's a second line of just even connecting within the order of a game. Like all of these things follow specific, rules, order, like, so I just go into like the order that God's put in our world. And then the surprises that happen within that. And that's part of the fun too, right? Cause we all know that a football game is going to be played the same way. You have to follow all the rules, but what's going to happen within it. So that's kind of how I framed that one. Just talking through the connection we have with people and then just the connection to an ordered world, but with surprises. And
yeah. As you've been kind of, I mean, I know you've been writing and talking about this and thinking about it. Have you run across like hobby skeptics? I mean, are there people out there that like really just like push back, like say, hey, I don't need a hobby. I work, I have family, I have, you know, I don't need to, you know, have hobbies. Is that something you've experienced in your time?
Actually, I really haven't.
Interesting. Okay.
I'm sure there's people. But most of the people I've talked to, have just been eager to tell me what they love doing. And that's been really fun. That's been my favorite part of telling people I'm writing a book, because then they usually get to tell me, you know, what they're interested in. And then I'll be like, oh, why? And I just love hearing their responses. On the things that I write, I just love hearing people's comments of, yes, this is how I feel when I, you know, whatever. I'm sure there are those people though. For sure.
Okay. So this imaginary person then out there that is hobby skeptical, what would be your just message to them? Not necessarily an argument or anything, but like, why, how would you go about sort of presenting your case for like why hobbies and play are just important for us?
Well, I mean, I think I'd want to find the root to it. So if it's a root of, I need to be doing something, and producing something, I think I'd bring them back to, the fact that we were not made for purely work alone. Before Adam and Eve were tasked with a job, right? Of naming animals or cultivating the earth. They first just simply received what God gave them. They ate from the food that he had, given. They took in the beauty of the garden, you know, they received his gifts of life and breath. And so we are not primarily workers. We are also receivers of God's good gifts. And I guess I'd encourage them in that with productivity to think through, this is what I talk about too, but I think it's a beautiful example that God did not make a world that, like, we don't live in a world that's purely productive in the sense that we think of it. You know, I think there's so many opportunities to look around and see an excess of artistry. And even the whole creation of God, of this world by God, was not because he needed to do something. You know, in Acts 17, Paul talks about how God did not need anything. So that attribute is his aseity. And so it means that God didn't need something when he created the world. He didn't need us. He wasn't solving a problem. He wasn't trying to fix something. He wasn't trying to produce something useful in a sense. He was creating out of delight, out of love. And so I think even that, and just looking around at the earth and the billions of stars, the so many colors that God's given us, the so many tastes, like we talked about, our world is just an abundance of the superfluous, right? Like, so I think that's just an example of we were not made just for production. So yeah, if it was a productivity mindset, I think I would just lead them to see the beauty of delighting and to just delighting for delight.
Yeah, that's a good word. I appreciate that. And beautifully spoken. That's good. I did want to tell you, my wife was doing some training. She's a therapist. She's doing some training on trauma, like helping people kind of process trauma. And before they could do the process of going through and kind of reliving the trauma, they wanted to make sure that you had all these kind of structures set up, like your support system, like who's in your support system, all this stuff. An aspect though of that was, do they have hobbies they're consistently operating in as one of those sort of support structures in order to be able to do, you know, trauma work? And I just never even kind of blew my mind, honestly. I'd never thought of hobbies as sort of that, you know, supporting, like, I know it supports mental health, but just like supporting your life kind of in general, like not having hobbies means you're more prone to, you know, struggle in certain ways. I'd never kind of considered that. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The benefits. I mean, there's a whole host of benefits scientifically, right, that you can see of, but just giving yourself space for rest for your thoughts to think through your thoughts. I mean, there's scientific evidence that like just even resting and even just like, you know, using our hands for different things just allows our mind to work and to to make sense of all the things that are in there, you know? There's just, the benefits are just a lot.
Great. No, that's good stuff. I love it. I appreciate the work, teaching about the hobbies, all the things. Well, are you ready to, jump into our final two questions as we kind of wrap up here? Yeah. Okay. So my first question for you is, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
I don't know. I didn't really have a strange job. My first job was, I was just working at a country club at the pool. That's not very strange.
Hey, I worked at a country club. I waited tables at a country club. I mean, I got into some interesting scenarios, I guess, at the country club. But
it was interesting.
Yeah, yeah, gotcha. That's good. That's
you
good.
Had to I love be it. On it all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
You had to get whatever you needed. Yep.
Yep. Yep. I love it. I love it. Okay. All right. Then my final question is, what is one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring God's kingdom more into their work?
Like I talked about, the more that you realize that there are no divisions, the more you will see how the Lord cares, how he applies, how you can worship him through every moment, right? So every moment of your vocational work, the mundane, right? The very ordinary. So the more that we can see our whole life is under Christ and under his reign, then the better off we are.
I love it. Bringing play into a theology of hustle is a very worthwhile thing. Thanks so much for making time for me and coming on and for the work. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks so much for hanging out and listening to A Theology of Hustle. Make sure that you like and subscribe, all the things, and follow me at Theology of Hustle on Instagram. My hope is that this podcast just encourages you in your work, whatever that may be. So until next time, get out there and hustle.